This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
He also said that the opposition-dominated legislature has made it hard for him to carry out the systematic transformation he promised the Senegalese during campaign. So these are some of the problems that he cited.
That was reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar briefing us on the dissolved opposition-led parliament in Senegal. Details coming up also. The World Health Organization says it has granted its first authorization for use of a vaccine against mpox in adults. And we'll have our sports roundup with Mokbilia Baro. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye Faye has dissolved the opposition-led National Assembly and called for new legislative elections on November 17th. The Beno Bok Yakar opposition platform, led by former President Macky Sall, has condemned the move. In talking to our reporter in Dakar, Alpha Jallo, I first asked why the President Diomaye Faye took this sudden move in dismissing the country's parliament.
The action he took, he used powers, invested on him by the constitution, and because he said that just before he came to this conclusion, he sought the opinion of the constitutional council, who told him that he could dissolve the parliament on the 12th of this month. He also said that the opposition-dominated legislature has made it hard for him to carry out the systematic transformation he promised the Senegalese during campaign. So these are some of the problems that he cited.
The Beno Bok Yakar opposition platform, led by former President Macky Sall, actually condemned the move that Diomaye Faye took as far as dismissing the parliament. They say Faye had convened a legislative session under false pretenses in order to announce the dissolution and accused him of perjury.
Yes, you are right. There has been reaction from the Beno Bok Yakar parliamentary group. We criticized the dissolution, saying it was aimed at just avoiding the submission of a motion of censure to the government, but also to prevent the prime minister to come before the National Assembly to make a general policy statement. In fact, this is where the problem all started, because this is the first time in the history of Senegal that a prime minister is appointed until for a period of 3 months, and he didn't come to the National Assembly to tell them how he intends to govern the country. So these are some of the problems they have been saying. But apart from also the reaction from Beno Bok Yakar, there have been several actions from civil society groups. This morning, it was everywhere in the news. They said that they were disappointed.
Diomaye Faye and Ousmane Sonko, the country's prime minister, actually Africa's youngest elected leaders. And their rise reflects widespread frustration among Senegal's youth with the country's direction. You know, that's a common sentiment across Africa, which has the world's youngest population accusing those who were in power earlier, clinging to power for decades.
Yes, you are right. Yeah, you are right. This is the reason why during the elections, they got 54% of the Senegalese who voted for them. And people hope that maybe they can address so many issues that the ordinary Senegals have been confronting, like the issues of unemployment, health and education.
The decision to dissolve the National Assembly, are there any reactions from the populace, from Dakar, from around the country to the actual dismissal of the parliament?
Obviously, there has been a reaction everywhere. This morning, the media, the news, TV stations, people have been reacting. There have been people, who where, you know, saying that ordinary people, ordinary Senegalese who doesn't know anything, but the only painful thing about the dissolution that the president has the constitutional right to dissolve. But if the president knew that he was going to dissolve on the parliament on the 12th, he shouldn't have taken a decree and wrote to the president of the National Assembly and informed the parliamentarians that his prime minister is coming on the 13th to make his general policy statement. So they said that the president has made a big mistake, though he's trying to protect maybe his prime minister, but at the end he is trying to make himself very unpopular among the Senegalese.
That was a reporter Alpha Diallo talking with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. The United States has proposed two new permanent seats on the UN Security Council for Africa, but they would not have veto power over the Council resolutions. Richard Gowan, director of the International Crisis Group, tells VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir that the position in support of the change is quite radical by US standards on Security Council reform.
Linda Thomas-Greenfield's announcement will win the administration goodwill in Africa. But Security Council reform is a very slow process, and there is no way that this can be negotiated before the end of President Biden's term.
Gowan says the unanswered question is what will happen after the November presidential election.
The big question for a lot of UN members is, will the Harris administration come in and take up this idea, in which case council reform might be possible down the road? Or will there be a Trump administration that is extremely unlikely to invest anything in overhauling UN institutions and will probably just give them a good kicking?
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield spoke in support of two African seats yesterday at the Council on Foreign Relations at a Washington, D.C.-based think tank. The announcement could be viewed as a strategic move towards repairing U.S. relations with Africa. Tensions in West Africa escalated after some countries appeared to side with Russia after its invasion of Ukraine and with America's defense of Israel during its offensive in the Gaza Strip. The U.S. presidential race between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump remains tight, but Harris has opened a sizable lead over Trump among one of the group of voters, women, who vote at higher rates than men. As VOA's Dora McGuire reports, Harris's late entry into the race widened the political party's gender gap.
Since 1984, more women than men have voted in U.S. presidential elections. And, for the most part, more of them vote for Democrats than vote for Republicans. Vice President Kamala Harris's sudden entry into the race, following President Joe Biden's July withdrawal, appears to have fired up this voting bloc. Erin Covey is with the Cook Political Report.
We have seen a pretty significant shift across a lot of different demographics, but with women in particular, who are now much more likely to vote for the Democrat at the top of the ticket than they were when it was Biden.
This election year, roughly 1 in 5 women say abortion rights is their key issue. In 2022, Supreme Court justices nominated by then-President Donald Trump helped eliminate constitutional rights to an abortion. Trump wants each state to decide abortion laws. Harris wants federal legislation to protect reproductive freedom nationwide. That is why these voters say they're backing Harris.
She's trying to create a world where people all have their rights to their own decisions, their bodies, their choices, women's rights.
She's for the people. Which is the middle class, which I am middle class, and the laws about women's rights.
Among female voters, the latest poll suggests that Harris leads Trump by anywhere from 9 to 13 points.
Paul Maslin is a pollster with FM3, a public opinion research firm.
She gained a lot of younger women who independents, nonpartisan voters under the age of 50, many of them under 40, who really got excited by her candidacy.
Here's Erin Covey.
Black women are a lot more likely to vote for Harris now, Hispanic women. So, you know, as we have seen her do better with a lot of these specific racial demographics or educational demographics, we have seen with women, that is really where that shift is coming from.
Male voters favor Trump by anywhere from 5 to 9 points, depending on the poll. These Trump supporters are from Georgia and Montana.
First, her being the candidate, this is like horrific to me because, first of all, she's not prepared to be president.
For months, we would barely ever see Joe Biden, and all of a sudden, Kamala Harris is the nominee for the Democratic Party when she was never nominated in the first place. She came out of nowhere.
The gender gap persists among younger voters in Gen Z, where a majority of men under the age of 27 favor Trump, according to pollster David McLennan of Meredith College.
There has been an increase in terms of the admiration of some Gen Z young men for, you know, swagger. It's very much a macho punch him in the face kind of thing.
McLennan says young men are politically socialized by online sources, where they often see and hear unflattering opinions about female leaders.
So they believe that women can't make the tough decisions. If the United States were to go to war or face international crisis, they don't believe that women have the ability to make the tough call.
White women were key to Trump's victory in 2016. He also won a majority of white women in 2020. In this race, the latest polls show Harris and Trump statistically tied among white women. Dora McQuarrie, VOA News, Washington.
During the presidential debate on Tuesday, Vice President Kamala Harris reiterated her call for a ceasefire for hostage deal in Gaza while expressing sympathy for both Israelis and Palestinians affected by the conflict. Harris condemned the October 7th attack by Hamas on southern Israel, but said far too many innocent Palestinians have been killed by Israel's ongoing military offensive in Gaza. Khalil Jashan, president of the Arab Center in Washington, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi whether Harris's stance could impact Arab American voters.
Essentially, what we heard from Harris was not surprising. This is essentially the current position of the Biden administration as it evolved over the past few months. I wish it started that way 11 months ago, but it didn't. And it took it forever to at least incorporate some of these nuances in it. It hasn't really changed substantively over the past 11 months, but at least in terms of nuances, particularly expressing this concern for the Palestinian side, which did not exist in the earlier phase of the conflict. So whether this is too little, too late, I think remains to be seen. We won't know until November 5th. Some people in the community, a small minority, have already basically decided that they do not want to contribute to the election of Trump rhetoric. And during the debate, his position is a lot worse. So they would like to avoid having to contribute to his election, even if it's indirectly. But those who have committed not to vote for Biden at the time he was running and now for Harris as she replaced him on the ticket, they remain either undecided or adamant about their position. So I'm not sure this debate has really shifted the balance of power, if you will, among the electorate at this time. I have a feeling it had only a very limited effect.
Vice President Kamala Harris said she would broker a deal to end the war between Israel and Hamas that has raged on for close to 1 year. Former President Donald Trump, meanwhile, claimed the war wouldn't have happened under his watch and suggested that Israel will not exist if Harris is elected president. And he said she hates Israel. Your take on both statements?
Clearly, both sides have politicized the issue in their favor. Definitely, the Republican candidate, Trump, is using it to demonize the Biden administration, its policies, and through it, of course, Harris, even though he's not necessarily running against Biden, but he seems like a obsessed with his positions and policies and feels that mixing Harris with Biden and the position of the administration over the past 3.5 years is to his advantage in terms of the campaign rhetoric. Her position is the same as the administration. After all, the Biden proposal made on May 31st, as we remember it, included 3 stages, at the end of which there will be a process of this sort. In other words, a return to state solution. The sad fact is that this administration, even though it ran 4 years ago on the premise of a two-state solution, it did nothing to affect that solution. It really didn't do enough. And my question today is, if they couldn't get Netanyahu to negotiate a ceasefire or to accept a ceasefire, how are they going to get him to accept a two-state solution, which he is openly against? So I think it's all electoral rhetoric that is meaningless in practical terms.
Harris said she would continue to work on a two-state solution that provides security for the Israeli people and in equal measures for Palestinians. What do you make of that pledge?
The pledge, it's fine as it comes. I would rather have people pledge a peace process or commitment to a peace process rather than to war, which we have witnessed over the past 11 months. But unfortunately, in the context of the heat of an election campaign, these words, sometimes they're not accompanied by specific political steps to be taken. So they are essentially election promises. And frankly, after 76 years of the Arab-Israeli conflict and after 11 months of genocide in Gaza, I'm personally not impressed by electioneering and by electoral promises.
That was Khalil Jashan, president of the Arab Center in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. 1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. The U.S. State Department said Thursday it was unconditionally releasing $1.3 billion in military aid to Egypt. This at a time when Cairo and Washington have been working closely on a Gaza ceasefire deal. Last year, the United States made the release of part of this annual aid conditional on progress on respecting human rights in Egypt, where ruler Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has been accused of suppressing dissent. This year, however, the State Department said Egypt had made progress in certain areas of human rights. The French news agency AFP says it also explicitly mentioned Cairo's help in mediating between Israel and Hamas on the war in Gaza. The State Department also mentioned Egypt's role in promoting a ceasefire in Sudan. The World Health Organization says it has granted its first authorization for use of a vaccine against mpox in adults. The WHO calls it an important step towards fighting against the disease in Africa and beyond. The Associated Press reports that the pre-qualification of a two-dose vaccine by Bavarian Nordic AS means that donors like Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and UNICEF can buy it, but supplies are limited. The approval says the vaccine may be used in children in outbreak settings where the benefits outweigh potential risks. Most cases in Congo, the country's hardest hit by mpox, are children. Tanzanian police said today that they are banning the main opposition party from holding a protest against killing and abductions of its members. The Chadema party has called for a mass rally September 23rd in the commercial capital Dar es Salaam unless recent disappearances were investigated and missing members brought back alive or dead. But police spokesperson David Mismy told reporters that police will deal with anyone who violates the ban. And now time for our sports roundup. I have in studio VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro. Thank you for appearing in the show, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yeheyes.
So there was a ton of international football games, one for the last 2 weeks. And what stands out?
Absolutely. So if we're just looking at what they like to call the Nations League Cup, this is the first of many international breaks that's happening during the football season. As we've spoken about this, the new setup for the football system, it's really loaded, it's packed up. A lot of people don't really like it. If you're supporting a specific club, you tend to see a lot of your players going out on international breaks. Some that we'll discuss maybe in a little bit, potentially coming back injured. That changes the trajectory of your team and everything. But as for this last 2 weeks, some of the games that kind of stood out to me were Portugal played against Croatia and beat them 2-1 in their first match on match day one. And then match day two, Portugal also won against Scotland 2-1. Interestingly enough, Cristiano Ronaldo, 39 years old, was able to score in both games. He's still able to score at a high level. Many have said since he went to the Saudi Pro League that he wasn't performing at that level anymore, but clearly it shows that he actually broke the record of 900 goals in his career. So wow. This is really a huge, huge thing for Cristiano Ronaldo, known as CR7. Another game I think that was really, really interesting was Belgium against Israel, 3-1 for Belgium. Belgium is one of those teams that's relatively rated high for years, but somehow on an international play just somehow cannot find the chemistry and cohesion, even though they have high quality players like Kevin De Bruyne, Lukaku, Doku, Trossard, just to name a few. But seems like they may be getting things underway. I think that's we'll leave that as that. But we'll touch on also the death quickly of former England manager Sven-Göran Eriksson, Swedish. He's a manager for England, and he also managed so many teams throughout his career. Very winning manager. David Beckham was amongst one of the attendees at his memorial. So condolences to the family. Huge, huge legend. David Beckham was the captain for the English national team.
And Mokbil, let's stay with football. The English Premier League is back this weekend. What are some big games to watch?
Absolutely, Yeheyes. I would have to say the North London Derby, Arsenal versus Tottenham, will be a huge one. Arsenal is going to be without Captain Odegaard, who got injured on that international break, as we were just talking about just a little while ago. And they also are going to be without another midfielder of theirs, quality player Declan Rice, after having gotten a very controversial red card in the prior match. So he misses this match. So it's going to be a very big test for them to see if they can get any kind of points from Tottenham, as that is a derby. Another game to watch, I would have to say, would be Manchester United versus Southampton. They're kind of going down this negative stretch. Are they able to pick themselves up and get a win to kind of get them into a positive space? And I think Liverpool versus Nottingham, I think Liverpool should get that win and still be on pace before they have quite a few difficult, very challenging schedule coming up later on in the month of October.
And lastly, Mokbil, the WNBA's rookie sensation, Caitlin Clark, she is on fire, just came out with a signature basketball. What was the fan reception of it?
Yes, this is the most insane thing I've seen in women, not even women's basketball, in basketball in general. Her basketball collaboration was with Wilson. Wilson is a basketball, they make basketballs. It's a huge company for basketball.
For tennis as well. Yes.
Absolutely. Huge company. 40 minutes, the basketball sold out.
How many?
Everywhere. I mean, just whatever the number was that they came out with. Yes. You know, if I'm looking at it, it said the number of basketballs Caitlin Clark sold roughly in the tens of thousands in 40 minutes.
The power of Caitlin Clark.
Come on, man.
Yes.
Huge.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van D, and our engineer, Syed Amdoun, thanks for choosing the Voice of America. Syed Amdoun.